With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We look forward to our Monday guests as Dr. Jerry Punch will join us a little bit later this hour. Plenty to discuss with Doc, including tonight's college football national championship game between Georgia and Alabama. It's always fun when we get to catch up and cross paths with Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. Talk Tennessee basketball, Tennessee football. Plenty of news from over the weekend in that regard. And then we also will have a number of comments post-game. Congratulations to the Lady Vols. They continue to roll 4-0 in SEC play to start. Took a one-loss Ole Miss team, beat them by double digits at their place. And now the Lady Vols, Jimmy Hyams, have jumped into the top five. How about that?
First time since 2015 they've been in the top five. And the thing that was noteworthy, they didn't get anything out of Ray Burrell. And they didn't get much out of Tamari Key. Mm-hmm. And yet they still won by 12 and had a 20-point lead at one point. That's a really good basketball team. Now, every now and then, when they're trying to put that game away, they'll make some silly plays that have me talking to my remote clicker. But they managed to get it done. There were some things they did. I'm like, I know that Kelly Harper is probably pulling her hair out over this one. But it was a very nice win, again, without getting anything really out of Ray Burrell, not much out of Tamari Key, but getting enough from the other players. Tess Darby gets 12 points. She had three threes.
Yep.
Alexis Dye had 17. And she is developing into a really nice player, becoming more consistent.
Yes.
And then Jordan Horston, 20 points, 11 rebounds. That's a good news. She had about six turnovers. Just confounds me sometimes to watch her. I grade her harder against the curve because I know how talented she is. And when I see her make some of those passes, I'm like, God, what are you thinking? But she'll also make some incredible plays along the way. So I guess you live with that. And if you're this deep into your career, I guess you are who you are. But, boy, she could – now, the previous game, I think she only had one turnover.
Mm-hmm.
So she has moments where she can cut them down. But she's a very gifted player. But I really like this team. I think a lot of what Kelly Harper's done so far.
Congratulations to them on being in this position. Their next game will be Thursday night as they travel to Nashville to take on Vanderbilt, but 4-0 to start SEC play. Wasn't the case for Tennessee and the Volunteers, as Jimmy Hyams, the LSU series has become one that you can kind of slide over into that Alabama category. It's one that has been perplexing, and right now, LSU just simply has the upper hand. Tennessee suffered its fourth straight loss to LSU in the series and another double-digit loss in Baton Rouge.
Just can't beat them in Baton Rouge, it seems like. And I almost have more faith in Tennessee winning in Rupp Arena now than I do at LSU. I watched LSU beat Kentucky. I thought LSU was a more athletic team. I thought they'd beat Tennessee. I thought it'd be really close. But Tennessee had some gaps in there where they could not hit a shot. And their three-point shooting was not very good. The more I watch this Tennessee team, the less I like it. They just seem to have so many holes about their game. They don't have real good inside scoring. They're not a real good outside shooting team. They're not a really good rebounding team. The only thing that they do well, in my opinion, is play defense. Really good defensive team, yeah. And that'll keep you in a lot of games. But it also has limitations. There's a ceiling on that. They have got to get their offense fixed. They've got to get more inside scoring. And when and if they do, I think they're a very dangerous team. But until then, I think they've got some concerns.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. It really seems that it's been more missed than hit, and it just doesn't seem, for whatever reason, like it clicks on the floor. And you see stretches, and hey, not congratulations, but tip of the cap to just the effort turned in. It would have been easy to just roll over when they were down 20. They rallied, mm-hmm. cut it down to 5, yep. and had chances to get closer than that, but could not convert when those situations arose. But so there was a group of Volunteers that fought to the finish, mm-hmm. But in the end, LSU able to reestablish the double-digit lead and get another, this time it was 12-point victory over Tennessee.
And I thought LSU's shooting percentage was helped by the fact they had some steals and dunks on the other end, fast mm-hmm. break points. I thought Tennessee's defense was pretty good for the most part, except for the breakaway dunks that LSU had. And then post-game, you had Rick Barnes kind of calling out John Fulkerson, saying that he needs to play better, he needs to bring energy, or we need to kind of go in another direction. There was a lot of backlash for Rick Barnes on that. So today at his press conference, he explained it. He said, look, John Fulkerson is not practiced like that, even after COVID. And if he's not feeling well, he needs to tell us. But he tells us he's feeling fine. He's practicing well. But his last two games, he's not played well. So I see both sides of that one. I thought when I first read the comments from Rick Barnes post-game Saturday, I thought that's pretty harsh on Fulkerson. But, again, if Fulkerson is having some COVID fatigue, which he had last year, if he's having it, he probably needs to express it. But being the competitor that he is, he probably doesn't want to say, I don't feel well, mm-hmm. don't play me.
Yeah.
That's probably hard for John Fulkerson or a lot of people to say.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that Coach Barnes, and I can appreciate how he amplified his answer or his remarks to say that if you think that I would say something to you guys about somebody without first talking to them, that I would use this opportunity mm-hmm. to either try and motivate my players or call somebody out, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, having had the opportunity to watch Coach Barnes operate behind the scenes as well as how he handles the opportunities, whether it's after a game or in a preview of an opponent, I think he is very direct, and he yeah. is not bashful when it comes to either heaping praise on a player face-to-face or, let's just say, tough love face-to-face.
Yeah, he'll do that. But as you mentioned, he said, if you think I'm speaking to you to get to my players a message, you're crazy, you guys are nuts. If you think that's going on, and then at the end of it, he just said, if you think that, you're just way off. And I think he's right about that. But I think that situation with Fulkerson, it needs to be resolved, I guess, to a certain degree. But if Barnes is right about what he's saying about Fulkerson, that Fulkerson is practicing well with energy, and then in the games he's not showing up, then I see Barnes's side of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also felt sympathetic to Fulkerson knowing he was coming off COVID.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, he's tired. He doesn't look like he's got energy. So anyway, we'll see what happens against South Carolina tomorrow night.
That we will. It's an earlier start time. So if mm-hmm. you're planning to go to the game, it's a 6:30 tip as opposed to 7 o'clock. 6:30 is the tip time. Coverage starts at 6 o'clock with the Vol Network. And I'll say this, who knows, because we've talked several times, you just don't know the big picture in regards to all the interactions between coach and player mm-hmm. or players behind the scenes. But you go back to the start of the season and Fulkerson is slowed because he has the hand injury.
Right.
And so not able to practice. Then as the season gets started, Coach Barnes didn't think that perhaps he was giving as much in practice as he should have. There were not only Fulkerson, but also veteran players. You can throw in Victor Bailey and I believe Josiah Jordan-James, that when Tennessee didn't play so well against Villanova, that they needed more from their upperclassmen mm-hmm. and their veterans. And then I think you saw some very, very good performances. I mean, you look at what Fulkerson has done in being the big key for Tennessee in a couple of wins. You could look at North Carolina as well as some other things, Arizona. And who knows? Again, I think there could be as much frustration for just how this season has gone, where now twice Fulkerson has been on the shelf. Not saying that that's Fulkerson's fault, but first you have the hand injury, then you have COVID, and it's just about managing what you've got to work with in terms of a coaching staff and the roster. And then also, I do think it has to be a player. It's on the player to be as transparent as possible as to how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And so I just think that, I mean, unfortunately, we've already seen two different chapters with Fulkerson this season that, again, could impact his performance on the floor.
He needs to play better, and he needs to get some help inside. Olivier Cumwa is starting to show that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Rick Barnes even said he's kind of encouraged with the progress that Cumwa is making. But they can't have Josiah Jordan-James going 1-for-7. I think he hit his first three, I think. And then I think he missed his next six.
Yeah.
They just have to shoot better. And they'll be nice when they shoot well. And then it's going to be like, okay, they're back. But, boy, I think it's tough to be a consistently good three-point shooting team, which is why I think they have got to figure out a way to manufacture points inside. They need – look, Fulkerson's not going to average 24 points and 10 rebounds.
Right.
But they need the Fulkerson that was so effective against Arizona.
Yeah. And then you look at all that Josiah Jordan-James is capable of,
yes.
And yet you also can point to really had a rough trip to Tuscaloosa, and as you mentioned, also had a very tough trip to Baton Rouge. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, there are opponents that now are very familiar with what James' strengths are as well as perhaps weaknesses, and he means so much to Tennessee with all he can do as a scorer, defender, yep. rebounder, you name it, that it's very tough to replicate, or I should say replace, if he's having an off night.
Yeah. So We'll see if Tennessee can bounce back and how they play against South Carolina. We'll get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. Tennessee actually shot a whole lot of free throws, and in fact, Rick Barnes said afterward, if you had told him they would shoot 37 free throws, he felt like they'd probably win the basketball game. Next up is that South Carolina game you mentioned. It's going to be at 6:30. The Lady Vols with that win at Ole Miss dominating the boards. It was 46-28 on the boards. That was a big reason why they were able to snap Ole Miss's 13-game win streak. And the Lady Vols have now held every opponent to 36% field goal shooting or worse. And the good thing about them, they don't take a lot of threes. They were 4 out of 14. They had only one player that was hitting threes. We got I was reading the story about the talent gap between Tennessee and Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama. Adam Sparks with the News Sentinel did a really good job breaking that down. Georgia and Alabama have more 5-stars on this roster tonight, 32, than Tennessee has signed in the past 20 years, 13. That's a huge difference.
Yes.
And Tennessee has not signed a 5-star in the last 3 years. In the last 20 years, Alabama signed 62, Georgia signed 56, and again, Tennessee, 13. So Tennessee has got to up the ante there. And also, Tennessee has paid the law firm over $1 million. It's $1,077,000. The most recent bill that I got from Tennessee on the Freedom of Information was at Tennessee. They were giving monthly statements, and then they changed it, so they gave the November-December bill. It was about $134,000, and I don't know if that means it's over or not. Got to be close to being over, but a few other notes out there. You got Florida cornerback Kyer Elam is declared for the NFL draft. It was interesting that Tyler Barron decided to stay after putting his name in the portal. But the really good news for Tennessee also over the weekend, Wyoming wide receiver transfer Isaiah Neyor has picked Tennessee. 44 catches. He averaged 20 yards a catch. He had 12 touchdown catches. Both of those last two figures ranked number 7 in the country. He's 6'3". He's 210. He said he runs a 4.38 40. He was a number 4 receiver in the transfer portal. He was a 2-star coming out of Arlington, Texas. But that doesn't matter because he's played really well at Wyoming. North Carolina, and Mack Brown has hired Gene Chizik as the defensive coordinator. Gene Chizik has been with ESPN for a number of years, won a national championship as Auburn's head coach in 2010. Washington State quarterback Jaden Delora has transferred. He's in the portal. I think Jerry Garantano has probably exhausted his eligibility, so I don't know that it matters that the quarterback there is leaving. College football playoff is considering national championship sites in the future, among them Las Vegas and Miami. Their 12-year deal ends in 2025. We'll see where they end up. Novak Djokovic has won his court battle to stay in Australia. A judge said that he was basically treated unfairly, and it was that canceling his visa was, quote, unreasonable, given all that he went through. However, and there is a however, the immigration minister could still revoke the visa for Novak Djokovic. And if he does, Djokovic could not enter the country of Australia for 3 years.
Really?
I can't imagine him doing that.
I
think now Djokovic is going to be allowed to play. But you talk about if you say we're revoking that visa and he can't come back to his country for 3 years, therefore he can't play in the Australian Open for the next 3 years. Wow. Rafael Nadal, who said it's been a circus. He said justice is spoken to let him play, and that's the fairest decision to make right now, is he should be able to play. And Novak Djokovic did admit to officials that he was unvaccinated, which is what everybody pretty much suspected, and that he had COVID in mid-December. So we'll see what happens with that. We'll jump on just a couple of NFL notes. I don't have time to get on a lot of it, but a number of firings that have occurred. So Denver Broncos with Vic Fangio. You got Mike Nagy with the Bears, Mike Zimmer with the Vikings. Brian Flores with Miami. That surprised me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So those are among the firings. There was a general manager of the New York Giants, Dave Gettleman. He is out. And Stephen Ross, who's the owner of the Dolphins, he's a Michigan guy. He said, I'm not hiring Harbaugh from Michigan. He's doing a great job there, and I'm not going to mess with my alma mater.
Okay.
So
you had two other GMs, Chicago and Minnesota, also made changes.
Yep. And so there's six. I saw six NFL firings. Well, they're going back to counting, I'm sure, Urban Meyer.
Yeah,
I guess.
Urban Meyer would be the fifth. And then you also have I wonder what the Raiders are going to do. I think Rich Bisaccia has done an outstanding job. For them to get to 10 wins with all they've gone through,
yep.
That's the other coaching change. And I believe it's the first time there's been a coaching change in a season and a team's made the playoffs. It's the first time since 1961.
Houston Oilers.
Wow.
That's the last team that went through that. The other thing that's interesting, Bisaccia even indicated he was considering running out the clock to tie the game. And yet the Chargers decided to call a timeout with 4 seconds left on the play clock. And then the Raiders ran the ball, picked up about 7 or 8 yards, kicked a field goal.
Yep.
And you're sitting there thinking, well, if he hadn't called that timeout, what do the Raiders do? I don't know. But Bisaccia said, yeah, we were considering running it out. It was an interesting set of circumstances that occurred late in that game.
It was. And I seen a breakdown, and somebody said that they had the same look in that set. They had run the previous two plays, and they were in the shotgun. The previous play, it was about a 7-yard gain for Jacobs, and they had that same look. They said you could point to one receiver in the formation and realize this was not going to be a pass. So in all likelihood, they were going to run the ball again. I don't think they were ever not going to try and win the game and perhaps kick a field goal, because if you tie, your reward is Kansas City. If you win, your reward is Cincinnati. And even though they lost to both teams, I think you would much rather draw Cincinnati. No offense to Bengals fans, but yeah. I just think you would look at that perhaps as the more favorable matchup than going to Arrowhead.
Yep. And then thank you, Rams, for messing around with my Saints. So the Saints win their game. They're in if the Rams beat San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So the Rams blow a 17-0 lead. That is the first time in 10 years that San Francisco's rallied from a 17-point deficit to win a game.
And what about Juwan Jennings? Two touchdowns, big
game. Big
part of that.
Big game. Over 100 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. So, but I was having trouble dealing with that one since it was eliminating my Saints.
I can fully understand that. Kind of like, for instance, any Colts fans in the area that were watching the Jaguars hand them yet another loss in Jacksonville. And still, the drought continues. Not one in Jacksonville since 2014. And you think about, while there have been good teams, occasionally, mostly bad teams in that stretch, just amazing that as bad consistently as Jacksonville has been as a franchise, that you have not won a game at their place since 2014. And you're talking about Andrew Luck, you're talking about Philip Rivers, talking about Carson Wentz and company yesterday. It's really... It is perplexing that that could even be possible.
Yes. And we mentioned Lady Vols up to number 5. The Vols are number 22 in the most recent AP poll. Those are News and Notes brought to you by Image Matters.
99.1, the sports animal. To join us, 865-656-9900. If you're dialing locally, that's 865-656-9900. If you're outside the local area, 866-656-9900 is a toll-free call.
And the playoffs are set with the NFL. We didn't hardly get around to that. But you got Philadelphia versus Tampa Bay. You got San Francisco at Dallas. The Rams at Arizona. Las Vegas goes to Cincinnati. New England at Buffalo. This is the trilogy here.
Yes.
And then Pittsburgh, a 13-point underdog going to Kansas City. So those are the playoff games that are set. And we'll see how they fare. Tampa Bay favored by 9.5. Dallas by 3.5. Arizona by 3.5. And then Cincinnati's favored by 6.5. The Bills by 4.5. As I mentioned earlier, Pittsburgh is an underdog by 13 to Kansas City. So we'll see how they fare. And then it was interesting in reading, there were so many different prop bets that picked a tie for Las Vegas and the Chargers last night.
Yeah.
And the bookies in Vegas said they would have lost millions if that game had ended up in a tie. Millions.
Goodness.
There were that many people that were parlaying that. Many of them were taking the Jags and the points or the Jags outright and parlaying that with a tie. One guy, though, did pretty good on that. He bet $1,000 on the Jags to win outright and a tie in regulation. He bet $1,000. He won $115,000.
Holy moly.
That's, not bad.
Yeah, that's well done.
Yeah.
I will say this. Let's see. Bad Take Andy nailed both of his selections yesterday. Let's see, if I remember correctly, I think I wrote him down here, is that he had the Jaguars outright, despite being nearly a 2-touchdown underdog, had the Jaguars winning the game outright, and then trying to think of what the other pick was. But anyhow, the Lions to beat the Packers.
Oh. Okay.
So he had the Jags and the Lions winning. And he also prefaced it. He says, I realize Green Bay's already won its division and claimed the one seed, so there wasn't a lot of, you know, inspiration for the and motivation for the Packers, but he just said Detroit's going to get the win and the Jaguars will win outright. So bad take had two good takes yesterday.
Yeah, that is a good take for bad take.
Yes. And we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. Always fun when we get to say hello to Dr. Jerry Punch as he joins us for the next hour. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there off Kingston Pike in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. Doc, they make it awfully easy for anybody who makes that first trip in. And once they've got your particulars, they put you on file. And it's just like you're a member of the New Balance Knoxville family, isn't it?
You walk in the door and they just welcome you home next time you go in. They go in and they know what you like, what you want, what the sizes are. You tell them what else you're going to do with your New Balances, and you're going to go hiking, walking, maybe just do some get on an elliptical a little bit or a bicycle or just want something comfortable to wear around the office or at work, and they will have all the numbers and they will take great care of you as they've done all of us over the years. And once you put on that first pair of New Balances, you will continue to go back and get more and more.
That's absolutely correct. And, Doc, we've got the college football title game tonight. Have you needed extra time to think about who you like in the matchup between Georgia and Alabama?
You know, no, John. I think it's interesting. It's one of those catch-22s. How do you bet against Nick Saban in any kind of a title game? I think, as I said last week, you know, if you looked at the Alabama team that played Auburn, barely got by the skin of its teeth in the final seconds of an Auburn team that was barely 500, or a team that struggled at Texas A&M, and yet when they showed up for the SEC championship game, it was Optimus Prime Alabama. It was the Alabama you've seen just come thundering in and dominate, and Georgia did not even get a sack, a Georgia team that we all have said has a defense that's generational this year with all the talent and the physicalness they have up front. And that's a defense we saw step up and just manhandle a very good Michigan team that we had already seen Michigan, you know, do what they did to Ohio State and then just dispense Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. And Georgia had little or no challenge in getting rid of Michigan in the semifinals. So, you know, one has to wonder tonight. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I look back, when I went back and looked at some of the highlights of the SEC title game, I started thinking, and I hear my colleagues saying the same things. No one understands why Georgia did what they did defensively. Georgia attempted to attack Alabama in their strength, right up the middle, between guard, center, guard gaps. They tried to come after them right up the middle, which is Alabama's strength in that offensive line. Whereas Auburn and Texas A&M were able to get penetration on the perimeter. They came off the edges. And there's no reason Georgia couldn't have done that. They just chose not to try. They tried a different tack, bringing people up the middle, and they couldn't get there. They did not get a single sack. And they were vulnerable to the run and also the pass game. So I'm wondering if Georgia says, okay, we're going to go back and do what Auburn did, what A&M did. We're going to bring our talented people off the edge. We're going to stack the line of scrimmage and see if they have enough receivers to beat us downfield. It'll be interesting to see. Also, it seemed to me like, I don't know if you guys thought this way, but it seemed like Georgia defensively, after the team we saw play all year long was not what we saw against Alabama. It's almost like they were a step slow. Maybe they were thinking about so much as opposed to just playing. They're like they were looking at things they'd been prepared for and preparing to looking for this, looking for that. And they were thinking about what they were going to do as opposed to reacting and just playing defense. So, you know, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting as to what Alabama tries to do. I've got to believe Alabama's going to try to incorporate getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly and maybe doing something that Georgia does quite a bit, is utilizing their tight ends, which they haven't done so much in the pass game this year.
Doc, college teams are not used to playing rematch games. You don't see it that often. But Nick Saban was in the pros before he went to Michigan State. Then he was with the Dolphins for a little while. He knows about rematch games. So does Bill O'Brien, offensive coordinator. He was in the NFL for a number of years. So does Doug Marrone. Do you think that gives Alabama staff a little bit of an advantage since they've had experience in the NFL of playing rematch games?
Well, I think it gives them, you know, a little bit of an advantage to know that you're going to have to change things up. And people have already seen, you've given them your best shot, and now you got to give it to them again. But you got to find a way you got to think about what they're going to do and what they couldn't do, and then think about how you stop that. So I think you've got a lot of depth, a lot of experience there. But I don't know in the college game if that's enough. I think you still, the college game, I think at the pros you've got people who are elite at every position, and you pretty much do at this game, quite honestly, with the talent level in Alabama and Georgia. I think it's interesting. I think the pressure, there's no question in my mind, even though Alabama's already beaten Georgia, if you watch the media day, you listen to the Alabama players and to the Georgia players, the Georgia players seem to be so focused and almost like they were just laser focused, and you could feel the intensity in their voice, whereas the Alabama players seem to be so relaxed. Now, maybe you got a different impression, but I got the impression from talking to some of my colleagues up there in Indianapolis that everything is on the shoulders of Georgia. You know, if you're Kirby Smart, how do you explain to your alumni, your fan base, if you don't get it done, this is the best team that Georgia's had in, you know, a decade or more, maybe in a long time. And, what kind of grace do you get if you don't win this game, even though you're playing a team that's already manhandled you once? And, you know, I just think the players feel like there's a tremendous amount of pressure on their shoulders. And the few people I've talked to in the Georgia party, and I have talked to a few that were in Indianapolis the first day, I think they admit that, you know, this is a game they feel like they need or almost have to win. I mean, you had the kind of season they've had, you know, how do you feel like any game's a must win? But I think this one, even though it is for the national championship, would be, you know, the hump game for Georgia football, taking them forward.
Let's get a call from Roger, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Roger.
Hey, John, Jimmy, Jerry Punch. How y'all doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, Roger.
And then fine. Jerry Punch. I talked to you. I asked you about the game tonight. Talking about the game some already, I just want to ask you about tonight. How do you think the matchup for Georgia, Alabama? I know Alabama won the first matchup, but what do you think that Georgia needs to do to win? What do you think Georgia needs to do differently to be able to win tonight, Jay Funch? Tonight,
I think Georgia will line up and run the football much more physically up front than we saw them do in the first game against Alabama. And after playing Michigan, I think they're going to line up and just say, okay, you come after us, and if you stop us, we're going to look at, you know, they've got receivers, but they also got a freshman tight end who they can spread him out or split him out. And he is a mismatch anywhere on the field. He's a height mismatch for their defender, so they can utilize him. I think Georgia didn't utilize the weapons they had as much and didn't play physical football, didn't play Georgia football, and I think that'll change tonight.
Okay. I hear you. Also, off of Jerry Punch, what's the key? You think, I remember I always find a way to win, but for Georgia, what's key? With Georgia winning tonight, what do you think the key is tonight?
I think Georgia has to play better defensively. They've got the people, they've got the depth, they've got the talent. They have to be able to contain. You got a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback there who can create things down the field. He's without Mechie, without maybe one of his go-to receivers. I think they've got to get pressure on him. They've got to force him to get rid of the football, and they've got to be able to get off the field on third down. I think Georgia's defense that didn't play well, didn't get a sack after being a sacking machines all year long, has got to play better. I think if Alabama gets the football, you cannot let Alabama take the opening drive, because I think Georgia's heard time and again that their defense did not step up and play the way they should have played in that game. And they tried to make up for it against Michigan, but they cannot let Alabama drive in the opening possession of this game tonight.
Roger, we always appreciate it. Thank you very much. Enjoy the game tonight, and always look forward to your next phone call. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. To join the conversation, 865-656-9900 is how you join us. That's 865-656-9900.
Doc, in regard to Tennessee football, we have seen them almost lose Tyler Barron. He stays. But they also get the number four rated receiver in the transfer portal, Isaiah Neuer. He's from Wyoming. 44 catches. He averaged 20 yards a catch. He had 12 touchdowns. How big of a get do you think that is to not just keep Tyler Barron, but to get this receiver from Wyoming to what they hope will plug in and play for a Velus Jones or a Javonte Payton?
Yeah, I think it's big. I think having an experienced college player now, the transfer portal, everyone's usually utilizing the transfer portal, and I think getting someone who has some experience, you know, is has proven, you know, at the level at and you know Division I college football that they can, maybe not in the Power Five conference, but have proven they can go down the field and compete and are willing to go up and compete for, you know, I think that says a lot. And then the Tyler Barron, I think his best football is ahead of him. I think that, you know, I think it would, just in my opinion, and I like this young man. I think he's got a world of talent. I think the surrounding cast he will have here in the next year or so at Tennessee will allow him to showcase his skills even more. And I think that we saw what Tennessee did with limited people, especially at the linebacking position. But you get some linebackers who can bring some pressure and do some things. That means those defensive ends are going to be turned loose because they're going to have to double team inside on some of these zone blitz games. So I think his best football is ahead of him. So I think him staying was the right move, not not to leave. I'm not sure he could have gone many places and been able to showcase his skills, the way he will at Tennessee the next 2 years. So I think that's a win-win for Tennessee in football.
Switching back to basketball, the Vols lose at LSU 79-67. What were your biggest takeaways from that game?
Well, I thought it was a very, very physical game, and you don't win because of the guys in the striped shirts, but I certainly thought there was they allowed very physical play underneath with regard to John Fulkerson and a few others. They just, you know, beat them around and shoved them down. And yet there were fouls called at the other end of the floor. A flagrant one, I thought, was on when you move out of the way and the player falls down, I'm not sure how that's a flagrant one. But they were calling. I just thought it was a huge discrepancy in the intensity with which the fouls were being adjudicated by the officials down there. Now, don't take anything away from LSU. They played they're a physical team. They're a long team. They play aggressive defense. And you know what? Give Tennessee credit. I mean, with a couple minutes left to play, Tennessee cuts it down to 5 points and has a shot, just can't make the shots. They didn't have enough of an inside game. I'm not sure if they had a couple more players that weren't 100%, but they needed maybe one more inside player that was healthy to be able to challenge, because they did pretty well with the inside-out game. When they were able to get the ball into the lane and then dish it back out for the shot, to clear the shot, they did pretty well. They just couldn't do that at the right time. So I thought Tennessee, they got behind, and give LSU a lot of credit, I thought, with their physical play, but, you know, and then just kept fighting back. So I felt pretty good about how they came back in the second half. I just think it was a very physical game, and I don't think it was called physically on both ends of the floor.
I also thought it was something to watch the officials kind of allow a lot of chirping to go on. I mean, I understand there's going to be the back and forth on the floor, but there were a couple of instances when there was timeout on the floor that, for instance, Pinson was over there in front of the Tennessee bench jawing, and that was allowed to continue before they came in and finally broke that up. And then there was also, I believe it was days after he fouls out of the game, he takes a slow path past the Tennessee bench where he was doing a lot of jawing. And that's not to say Tennessee players weren't engaging back and forth while they were on the floor, but I'm just saying there were two specific instances where LSU players were there in front of the Tennessee bench. Just don't normally see that.
Well, and I think you saw a huge contrast in how the head coaches handle things on the floor. Couldn't be prouder. I know that Rick Barnes had to be frustrated, and disappointed. And but he handles it with class and dignity, even though he did let some officials know that he didn't think some of these calls were first of all, they weren't equitable, and secondly, a couple of them were not even close to being correct when you watch the replay. I just don't, and I, you know, here again, when I'm calling games, I got to be Switzerland, but I'm not calling that basketball game, and I just frustrated me is the continued gyrations and histrionics of the LSU coach, head coach. I just don't get that. I don't know how officials, some respond to that, and apparently these guys did, but continuously on the floor, you know, and everything that any time the whistle was blown for LSU, he acted like it was, you know, someone on his staff had been shot. I think that just goes above and beyond. This is not an Academy Award performance on the sidelines. And some of those officials, some of those coaches, I guess, are very fewer and fewer do that. The ones I respect don't.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall, right off of Kingston Pike. We'll get a break. Another half hour with Doc Punch coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.